I'm joined here by Greg Nuloshi to discuss his recent paper, Agency Practitioners, Pseudo-Professionalization Tactics and Advertising Professionalism. Greg, can you tell me about this paper, please?
This paper actually relates to a long-standing interest of mine, and that's the relations between academia and the practitioner world in business, and in a more focused way, marketing and the advertising agency world. And what perhaps is an obvious statement to a lot of people is that there is a big gap between these two worlds. You know, the usual criticism against academia is that they are very theoretical, they are far removed from the everyday world. On the other side, agency practitioners are criticized being not very theoretical, not really standing on anything firm, they are just going by the seat of their pants. So it appears that they are indeed in different worlds. So my interest was, okay, let's try to see this, if this is really true. So I conducted a bunch of interviews in the United States with agency practitioners, and I was asking them about their views of how they think advertising works. I also asked them about this conflict between the practitioner and the academic world. So this was an organizational ethnography of sorts. I talked to a lot of high-level executives in a southern market in the United States. And it was about 30 interviews with really high-ranking people. So they are all seasoned, and they have a lot of experience. And what I found was that it is indeed true that there's a big gap between these two worlds. So then I became interested in why that is. So what's the explanation? What is the sort of the theoretical underpinning? And I looked around and looked at different theories that could explain this apparent gap. And then I found this idea of professionalization, which is a theory of occupations, organizational behavior. And basically it says that there are certain occupations that are special. And what makes them special is that they have a firm underpinning, something that they call a theoretical knowledge base. And what that allows these occupations to do is achieve a higher prestige level within society. So this is pretty advantageous for a lot of occupations to get this, because they can get a lot more respect from their clients. They can actually charge higher prices for the services. Their overall standing increases. So a typical example would be lawyers or medical professionals, doctors, things like that. And so the insight is that even though there are these special occupations, all occupations try to do this. Everybody tries to sort of get to this space because of the benefits of higher prestige, higher prices, and so on. So it appears that, indeed, advertising and marketing launched a professionalization project like that. They want to be like lawyers or medical professionals, and that's one of the reasons actually why we have a marketing department to begin with at the university. So this project has started, but the interesting thing is that it somehow failed. It didn't really came to fruition, and it didn't really fulfill the initial expectation of reaching this academic status. So we have sort of a mixed bag situation where, on the one hand, we marketing professionals want to be professionalized. On the other hand, we observe this big gap, and I have a lot of data to support that there is this huge gap. So I realized that professionalization theory applies to it, but in a fascinatingly complex way, in sort of a twisted way. Because what practitioners are doing is they are navigating it between these two worlds, and instead of having a full professionalization project, they just have their own, what I called, pseudo-professionalization tactics. So they are pragmatists. They are using all sorts of tricks, which I don't mean it in a pejorative way, but as business professionals, they are pragmatic, and they are using pragmatic tools how to get around this gap between academia and practice, this gap between having a respectable theoretical knowledge base, but being pragmatic on the other side. So I discovered, and this is what this paper specifically is all about, what are some of these tactics that they use, and this is what I detail in this article.
What are those tactics?
So I list seven of them, and I kind of group them into three different groups. So one of them have to do with rhetorics. So in other words, let's say that I do not exactly have a firm theoretical knowledge base for what I need to do. A typical example would be creative development within an advertising agency. So the agency has a task of selling a particular product. They develop the creative, but they cannot say that this was a scientific process, right? They know that. That would be foolish for them to say that there's a science to do it. So instead they say, okay, let's not even go there. Let's try to use rhetorical tools to sell this as if it was something scientific. So they do things like, so let's say we have a creative execution, they sell it with some sort of a strategic rationalization that's underneath it. So let's say I came up with this really brilliant TV commercial. The way I sell it is not to talk about how it looks or what's in it creatively. Rather, let's talk about the target group, the consumer, and say, look, this is really relevant for the consumer. In other words, they're using strategy, something different from creative, to sell it, which is kind of all right. I mean, it makes sense. It's not exactly providing that scientific base that you would have assumed you would need it, but at least, you know, it gives substantiation. It gives the semblance of this is being based on something firm. And I have other things like, you know, presenting creative as if it were logical. So we know that the creative world is very, you know, distinct from strategy making or research or even, you know, typical business processes. But you can present it as if it was something that was arrived at as a result of a logical process. So again, it's a rhetoric. It's how you position it, how you frame it, what context you're putting it into. And what I found was that these professionals are really adept at that skill of pitching it in a pseudo-professional way. Mm-hmm. Now, some other things that I mentioned here are also relationship management. So if you can achieve a really strong relationship with your constituencies, with your brand manager, or even some of the respondents suggested that the best thing to do is talk directly to the CEO and establish a really strong relationship with the higher management of the firm. So if there's a strong relationship between the CEO and the advertising agency executives, then there's not going to be that many questions about the surface of the execution, because there's the trust that the relationship management does. Now, does that resolve the professional problem of the advertising industry? Probably not. But on a person-to-person, on a person-to-person basis, it's resolved for that particular case. And the last one of the three groups of these tactics is about knowledge creation. So, okay, we cannot really use academia because it's different from us. We don't really understand it. We don't really care about it. Well, what if we say we have agency philosophies? What if we say we have our own proprietary sort of black box tools and present that to the client and say, look, we have this fantastic branded black box proprietary tool that we use. We're not going to tell you exactly what that is, because it's not like publishing a research paper where you reveal all your sources and everything. But trust us, we have something special, and we have something almost scientific. So that's sort of a third tool that they use. And I just found this really fascinating, how they use these different sort of pragmatic tactics to get around the fundamental problem that really challenges the industry. And it has been challenging the industry for a long time.
I think relationship management is a key one in respect of that, because I think that's a key focus of many agencies, to ensure that they hit the correct pressure point, if you will, in management.
And I guess it applies in the business world in a broader sense, that a good relationship management can help you jump over hoops if other problems, but you still have a strong, trustful relationship with your with your partners, then you can solve problems much more easily. And it's definitely something that an advertising professional needs to master. So no question about that.
In terms of the advertising world recoiling from academia and recoiling from this knowledge base, how do you see that conflict going forward?
I think that that gap is still there. What's happening, of course, is the digital world. And the claim that is often being made is that the digital world will help bridge this gap, because on the internet, everything is more measurable. So now a lot of agencies, I think, are playing the game of promising more measurability. You know, the word big data or the phrase big data is being thrown around quite a bit nowadays. And I think a lot of advertising agencies are using that as a basis to, again, to replace academia with this sort of more pragmatic, I want to say market research. When I say market research, it's a pragmatic industry, right? So they use market research and online market research to substantiate some of their claims. So if you're asking me about the future, I think that's definitely the future, that we will see more of that that claim being made, that online advertising is more measurable, therefore we need to move there. In fact, in The Economist, there was just a big article about how the restructuring of one of the big advertising agency groups, Omnicom and Publicis, they're going to merge, is driven by this need for more sort of mathematically based or data-based substantiation for their works. And I think it's definitely there. The need from clients is there to show more substantiation. I have doubts whether advertising creative would ever become a science, but you can use some tools, again, I like to call them pseudo tools, tactics, to, you know, to try to bridge it. It's always going to be, I think, a gap between science and...
The traditional mold of advertising has been shattered in many respects, and what you are seeing is exactly that, and the introduction of big data being bolted on to the advertising industry in many ways. And what you're seeing is kind of a move towards what's called business analytics in many respects as well. So,
and there's a huge need from clients, from marketers, to get that data, to get that reassurance that what they do in marketing is actually creating a result. And I think there's in some areas there's definite promise for them to do that. I mean, if you look at search marketing, for example, you can definitely see the clear data-driven results. The problem is more on the very creative, let's say, television-based executions. And it's not going to die, ultimately, altogether, but it's going to be kind of difficult to substantiate going forward still.
Okay. Going back to your research, let's look at the implications for the advertising occupation.
What I'm showing is that some of these pragmatic tactics, and I'm insisting on that phrase, that this is not a solution, it's more like a tactic to be pragmatic. And let's just say, rather than pretending that this problem could be completely removed, let's just use local solutions. And we mentioned relationship management being one, rhetorical tools being another, creating a sort of knowledge-based proprietary systems another, and perhaps big data is a fourth going forward. So I think the solutions or the implications or recommendations are pragmatic ones. Use whatever local tools you have and solve these problems of you know, not having enough substantiation locally. Take data for the particular case and resolve it for the particular situation at hand. Your particular brand, your particular client relationship, rather than trying to say that there's an overarching, like, big resolution, because I don't think that's available. So I guess I'm a contingency theorist, saying that always consider what's locally available. You know, it all depends on the particular situation, and try to use bits and pieces of, and this is exactly what my interviews are doing, to develop that trust, to show whatever you can to substantiate, knowing that there's always sort of a realm in creative that's never going to be modelable or.
Well, Greg, I want to thank you for the time. The link to the article will appear on the BE News website.
Yeah, thank you very much.